Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Check out the website, thericksmithshow.com. So as I said earlier, you know, I woke up with, you know, just to this horrible, these horrible images and all of this, which just to the pit of my stomach made me sick. And then I, you know, throughout the day, I'm checking Twitter and I'm reading, you know, some of the comments. And I came across one by this megachurch pastor. And again, you know, I guess it's just that I have a very different view of what religion should be. You know, it's one of those things that should comfort us in our moments of need and help us in our times of need, but also to unite us and help make us think about, you know, caring for others. And I guess it goes back to, you know, my upbringing and thinking in certain ways. But when I see this megachurch pastor, this Rodney Howard Brown, whom I haven't really heard of until now, here's what he wrote. He said, there's no doubt what happened in New Zealand is horrific as it is a false flag that will be blamed on conservatives when it's all said and done. Only a total nut job, lunatic, insane, demonizing freak goes into a building and kills people. It's unacceptable on level every level. At least he understands that. But what kind of pastor comes out and says, it's a false flag? Bizarre stuff. And here to share some thoughts on just how crazy our religious extremists have become and how these religious terrorists seem to be grown, I've asked our good friend Chris Stroop to come talk with us. Chris is the founder of Empty the Pews hashtag and Expose Christian Schools. Chris, thanks for taking time for us.
Thanks for having me on, Rick. It's always great to be with you.
So, man, whenever I have you on, it's always something that makes me really sad and really depressed and really angry. And I'll tell you, you know, today was that day.
Yeah, this is some really heavy, depressing stuff. No two ways about it. Absolutely horrific what happened in New Zealand. And, you know, unfortunately, an evangelical megachurch pastor deflecting about it with conspiratorial talking points is kind of par for the course with American evangelicals these days. You know, Rush Limbaugh used the same talking point today. So the right in America and evangelical Christianity that Venn diagram is basically a circle.
No, but I look at this and I go, you know, maybe it's just, again, I go back to my being a kid and growing up in the Catholic Church of, you know, which I'm kind of a broken Catholic after the beatings I took at the hands of the nuns. But at least, you know, while they were beating us, they were preaching about social justice. And while they were smacking us across the back of the head, they were talking about peace and love and understanding and taking care of thy neighbor. I mean, if nothing, they at least beat that into us.
Sure. And, you know, I mean, obviously, you know, most Christians are not terrorists or extremists. Most Muslims are not terrorists or extremists. But when religion goes wrong and is used to justify bigotry and violent ideologies or violent impulses, it goes really wrong. It can become a very powerful instrument to be used for those things.
But isn't this one of the rules? I mean, you know, I know conservatives want to put the 10 rules everywhere. And I've always had this theory that the people who want it plastered everywhere don't know them.
Well, you know, they do have a very dark view of human nature. That's characteristic of the authoritarian personality that is clustered overwhelmingly on the right, certainly in the United States, that they believe that without this kind of external authority from God, everyone would be horrible all the time. And it's only by the grace of God that some people aren't horrible some of the time. And so naturally, people who believe things like that commit all kinds of abuses, cover the abuses up. We're seeing that pattern in the Southern Baptist Convention right now, and I think we're going to see far more abuse scandals coming out of evangelical churches and denominations. It's just that the lack of centralization is part of what helps keep that more obscure than the scandals in the Catholic Church that have been coming out for a long time now. But they are coming out, the Southern Baptist Convention in particular, and that's the largest Protestant denomination in the United States, is reeling from major revelations of abuse. And this is kind of all of a piece. You know, when you think about things like child marriage, maybe the first thing that would come to your mind would be, you know, third world predominantly Muslim countries, but America has a child marriage problem, and it's not a Muslim child marriage problem, it's a Christian child marriage problem. A lot of states still allow girls as young as 14 or even 12 to get married. Every time there's an initiative to change that, Christian right lobby shuts it down.
What kind of backward state still allows that? I don't even know.
Kentucky, Tennessee.
Somebody wanted to marry my 12 or 14-year-old daughter, there'd be hell to pay.
Yeah, well, you know, usually it comes out of a situation where that girl has been abused, you know, has been raped by an older man and is forced into a shotgun marriage. But, you know, more states than you would think. I don't remember all of them off the top of my head, but it's surprisingly pervasive. In America, there was a big expose in the New York Times maybe a year ago that laid forth a lot of the data.
Jeez, it's just, if somebody raped my daughter, there'd be a trial, all right. It'd be my trial.
Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely horrifying how strong these patriarchal norms are in radical right-wing Christian communities, and a lot of people don't want to face it. And, I mean, that's a bit to the side of the type of violence that happened in New Zealand, but it's certainly closely related. And certainly when you look at these kind of neo-fascist or alt-right types like this Brenton Tarrant.
Don't say his name.
Have been, you know, that you don't see as much of the element of piety or, you know, as much invocation of religious language in his manifesto. He posed, some of it was in question and answer format. He posed the question, are you a Christian? And said, it's complicated. I'll let you know when I find out. But he also had a message in there to Christians, and it ended with, what would Pope Urban II do? You know, so basically a call for a crusade. But he made it quite clear that he was motivated primarily by racism and ethno-nationalism. Our Christian right usually doesn't like to admit that they are motivated by racism, although they clearly are, but they speak a different language. But a lot of the conspiracies that you see in the sort of militia groups and patriot groups have also become popular on the Christian right since about the 1990s. There is something of a convergence there. And certainly on the issue of, you know, large families, no abortion, patriarchy, they come together. Xenophobia. Certainly I grew up with a lot of Islamophobia. You know, a lot of demonization of Muslims, preachers preaching from the pulpit that a good Muslim, quote unquote, should want to kill Christians and Jews. That's something a pastor directly said that I've remembered ever since because it was so absurd and horrifying. And even then I knew something was wrong with it in 1997. In a non-denominational church in Carmel, Indiana, you know, these views are quite common, both on those who kind of focus on this online, young, radical white men trolling kind of 4chan, 8chan thing, and, you know, the same sort of demonization of Islam or the fear that they're going to replace us, outbreed us, can be found on the Christian right, too.
Yeah, I've heard all of those, you know, that fear and smear that, you know, that they're invading and they're coming to, you know, take over our politics and all of that. And, you know, there's part of me that goes, how do you wake up? How do you function with that kind of mindset? I mean, with that kind of hatred in your heart and your soul, I just don't know how you function.
It's really hard for me to understand on a visceral level as well, but I think that, you know, when it comes to internet culture today, including gamer culture, where a lot of this happens, a lot of people end up getting radicalized and sort of joining some version of the alt-right, you know, I think a lot of these people just have sort of empty lives. They don't know what to do with themselves, and then this gives them a way to gain visibility. It gives them a sense of purpose. It's very twisted.
So it's they're losers. I mean, when I was a kid, you just called them losers.
I mean, I think in many cases, yeah, you know, someone like this guy from New South Wales, yeah, he was a loser. He didn't do well in school, and you know, he graduated. He got a job at a gym as a personal trainer. Apparently, he was good at that, but he just became increasingly hateful, you know.
Because, you know, I looked at this and I'm going, you know, how is it that the people around him didn't go, hey, there's something wrong here. This guy's losing his marbles. Or is it that, you know, these people just find each other and they lose their marbles together?
So we don't know a whole lot about what exactly his family knew or didn't know about him. Yet we do know that they once they saw the terror attack happening, apparently they watched it in real time. They called the New Zealand police immediately, the Christchurch police force, to offer their help. But from what I've read, and I don't think we have very detailed information yet, they didn't see this coming. And, you know, you see that a lot when a kid becomes someone who becomes a school shooter or something like that. They're introverted, they're withdrawn. The family may not fully know what's going on with them.
Did you happen to watch the videos? Did you watch those?
No, I did not actually watch the attack.
Because I woke up, I woke up this morning, and it was one of these things that it was right there. I clicked on the, and there's this video, and I started watching it. And at first, it didn't seem real. It was almost like a video game. And I'm going, what the hell is this? And then all of a sudden, I just, in the pit of my stomach, I was just, you know, I was just sick. And it was just one of these things. I'm going, why is this here? And I immediately reported it and blocked this person. And I scrolled down a little farther, and there's another one. And I'm going, who does this? Who thinks this is a good idea?
You know, he announced it on 8chan, live streamed it using Facebook's app. And so we're seeing here the dark side of social media and all of this connectivity that modern technology gives us. When they started building up all of this internet technology and so forth, tech entrepreneurs generally thought this was going to be so great for democracy, free speech, more open societies, and so forth. But we've now seen that the power of social media can really be used for evil, and we don't have a good solution to what to do about this yet. It is in online communities, in places like Steam and Discord, and these kinds of online spaces where gamers hang out, that you meet a lot of these radical right wingers who start putting out these racist talking points, and you can get sucked in. And there's coordination as well. I've also encountered how sometimes 4chan trolls get together, plan their talking points. You can document it happening and then descend onto Twitter and just go berserk on someone.
You've been a target, haven't you?
Well, sort of. So I started the Exposed Christian Schools hashtag, and they did come after me, but more, they came after Dan Levin, a New York Times reporter who was going to write about the hashtag phenomenon, which had really gone remarkably viral. And they mobilized against him and spun this right-wing narrative of the New York Times is trying to slam Christian schools, is trying to smear Christians. And the whole right propaganda media sphere ran with that narrative. It was mentioned recently in an op-ed on Fox, as recently as a couple weeks ago, as, you know, the New York Times is trying to smear Christians, which is not what it was at all. You know, the Exposed Christian Schools hashtag was a way for those of us who went to extremist Christian schools to talk back about our own experiences. It wasn't created by media elites, but the right wants you to think it was created by media elites, or that maybe we're paid by George Soros to tweet about it, because then they don't have to face the truth.
Yeah. Did you get your Soros check?
Well, you know, I did give a talk at Open Society Foundations in New York once, so I guess by proxy I got a flight, a hotel room really close to Times Square, and a free lunch from George Soros.
Okay, because I'm still waiting for my Soros check. I'm still waiting for it. I'm maybe it'll come.
I haven't gotten mine either. But he didn't come. I wasn't important enough for him to actually come to my talk at Open Society Foundations either. But you know.
Maybe next time. But, you know, here's the thing. I remember growing up, you know, late 70s, early 80s, And I remember the Baptist church in our area had a crazy school, and I knew some of the kids who went there, and you know, their parents were, you know, off the deep end, and they would tell things that would go on in these churches, and I was, no, that can't be real. And you know, it was the beginning of this kind of insanity. And mm-hmm. you know, I now see, you know, I years later, I watched this movie, what was it, Jesus Camp or something?
Yeah, that was definitely a big documentary back when. Was that 15 years ago?
Something like that. And it just completely freaked me out. And I'm going, is this not child abuse? Shouldn't at some point we as a sane society say, this is a bridge too far?
I do think that, you know, when you grow up in that kind of extreme religion, even if you're not being physically or sexually abused, and those things are pervasive in authoritarian religious communities. And, you know, our understanding of physical abuse is changing as well. I mean, we now have all the data to show that spanking, hitting children, subjecting children to physical violence never does anything good for their psyches. You know, it does leave lasting trauma. I mean, the worst I got growing up was I was hit with a wooden spoon. I was not sexually abused. But, you know, I was terrorized by fear of hell, and had it instilled into me that it was my job to try to convert everyone else to our exact narrow version of Christianity and so forth. And I do think that's abusive. It's a kind of a, fundamentalism is kind of a cycle of abuse.
I mean, to me, any of this extremist behavior is, you know, get checked. We need to get people checked. Let me ask you a last line of questioning, because, you know, there's a whole bunch of these frames that keep popping out. You know, the thoughts and prayers, obviously, the good guy with a gun, obviously. And then the other one, that it's the evil media. And I saw Denise D'Souza, who I still think should be in jail. He says, you know, any act of terror is evil. But if a Muslim guy shot up a church in New Zealand, it would not be news here. The media is going crazy over this mosque attack. For one reason, it fits their narrative. Muslims good, white man bad. So part of the story here is how fake news is made.
God, I hate Dinesh D'Souza. I mean, literally, nobody says that. Muslim good, white man bad. Also, sometimes there are white people who are Muslims. But, you know, D'Souza is a complete charlatan, and yes, a convicted felon for a campaign finance violation. Shady partisan hack. But this is a horrible thing to say, but it's also a typical right-wing talking point, you know, because those of us on the left are fighting for equality, and so questioning and challenging things like white privilege and Christian privilege, they claim that they're being persecuted and they're under attack. But, you know, I'm sure that had a church been attacked in New Zealand, we would definitely be talking about that as well. So obviously terrorism is horrible, however it happens and whoever carries it out. But to downplay white nationalist terrorism, or at least in the, let's say, civilizational sense, right, because these are the people who are obsessed with Western civilization or Christian civilization, we could also call this Christian terrorism, what happened in New Zealand, is not helpful at all, because it is a very serious threat. It's a global threat, right-wing extremist network. There's a big conference happening at the end of this month in Verona, Italy, called the World Congress of Families. And, you know, these are less the overt ethno-nationalist extremists, more the Christian extremists, but coming together to network and share strategies and talking points and literature about how to try to ban abortion and challenge LGBTQ rights and women's rights around the world. It's going to be attended by Italian Deputy Prime Minister Matteo Salvini, who many see as a neo-fascist, and the alt-right Day Network as well. Largely offline, but sometimes off. People who actually carry out these kinds of attacks, in many cases, do it on their own, but they do it as part of this whole toxic ideological system. And people like D'Souza want us not to talk about that, because they'd really like to be able to oppress Muslims or other kinds of minorities. It is really strange in the case of D'Souza himself being a person of color, but sometimes that also does happen.
Yeah, again, for folks at that point, the only color that really matters is green. And you'll find that, you know, you don't have to agree. I find that people are willing to sell their soul for a price. And I'm sure
D'Souza is, you know, demonstrably a very corrupt man. And certainly economics and class does come into play here. When you have things as unequal as they are now, it creates social tension and social strain. And it's not like Australia or New Zealand or the United States can't handle taking more immigrants. But the more that the more you have extreme social inequality and ordinary people feeling like they can't get by, the more fearful they're going to be, and the more open they might be to conspiracies and paranoid talking points.
No, you're absolutely right, and I say one of the reasons for that is the destruction of labor unions in this country and in others. The power to be able to make a living, the power to be able to support your family, has been taken away from a lot of workers, and that powerlessness, that helplessness, manifests itself in other ways. And sadly, this being one of them, I believe.
Yeah, fear ramps up people's authoritarian impulses. And when that happens, you start looking for a scapegoat, an external enemy, somebody to blame. And, corrupt hacks like D'Souza, I will not call him an intellectual, are happy to play up those kinds of fears. We've had the politics of fear on the right in this country for so long now that it's created a monster. And it's very interesting that, you know, Donald Trump uses the language of invasion, crisis, national emergency when he talks about people coming across the border, even though people coming across our southern border illegally and immigrating across the southern border is down during his presidency. He's created this whole imaginary crisis, vetoed that bill today, and he uses the language of invasion. That language is also all over the manifesto of the white nationalist terrorists who killed those 49 people in those Christchurch mosques. So that's another place where they come together. And Donald Trump, interestingly, is backed primarily by white evangelical Christians and right-wing white Catholics and Mormons. But, you know, evangelicals are his most supportive demographic. They may not use the same kind of direct white nationalist language, but he used it. You know, this is an invasion. And then there's that language of replacement, which we also saw in Charlottesville with, you know, all those MAGA assholes, white boys with their tiki torches chanting, "Jews will not replace us." That same obsession you also see in the manifesto about the attack in New Zealand.
Yeah, do you find it interesting that on this day Trump chose to welcome Jews into the Republican Party while this was going on?
There's that, and then there was also that whole media circus that he created with his use of his veto pen to veto the bipartisan bill that overturned his unilateral executive declaration of a national emergency, which is arguably unconstitutional and certainly an overreach. Using, again, that language of we have an invasion at our southern border is a very, very bad look when you have a white terrorist who framed his own act of terrorism, which he actually called terrorism. He used that word himself as a defensive act against so-called invaders.
Man, I just the world that we live in scares me every day.
It's a dark and scary place in some ways. I mean, there are a lot of crises right now that they're connected. We're seeing sort of the dark side of globalization rear its ugly head. And the funny thing, though, about all these ethno-nationalists who claim that they support sovereignty is that they are every bit as international as the so-called globalists that they supposedly are fighting against. It's all interconnected, and we have to find integrated solutions. We have to work internationally to oppose rising fascism worldwide.
Yeah, I'm with you. Chris, I appreciate the time and the thoughts. Again, sad day. One of these days, we're going to bring you back on an upbeat day.
I keep saying, you know, someday I'm going to use my Twitter to tweet about kittens and flowers and puppies. But, you know, in the meantime, I know depressing things, and they happen to matter for, you know, the way that things are going. So I keep talking about them.
I appreciate it, Chris. It's always great talking with you. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Rick.
Keep
great
up the great work. Make sure you follow Chris Troop on Twitter. One of the good great commentators on this stuff, and exposing just how crazy some of this stuff really is. I'd love to hear your thoughts. You can email me, rick@therickSmithShow.com. Quick break. Right back. Stick around. Listen to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Time to talk.